Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guest. And today's our guest is Bernadine Hage. That's Bernadine Hage. And we're going to be talking about her book, Sham Social Change Through Contrived Crises. And the book was produced a little while ago, but printed a little while ago. But there's nothing pretty has changed since that time. And she shows how they actually have this pattern of, well, they'll create a crisis and then they'll get a study group together. Like, well, we saw this with the crisis they've created in Iraq by sending our boys over there, never enough of them, never letting them do what was necessary. Oh, and creating a crisis, and then, of course, you get the Iraq study group together, and they sit down, and they have this long, detailed dissertation, and they come up with a preconceived conclusion, and but it never solves the problem. And so, Bernadine, thank you so very much for being with us.
You're welcome, and thank you for having me.
Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and how it was that you happened to write this book?
I became very, very concerned about crime in Tucson, in our country, of course, and I wanted to try to do something about it. And I saw an article in the paper by the then county attorney, Bill Smitherman, and he was asking for civilian volunteers to try to do something to contain the drug problem. And so I volunteered. And then we formed a group against crime, and it just sort of mushroomed from there. Actually, I was a very, very naive housewife, homemaker at the time, and I really was not aware of all of the undercurrents in political aspects of everything that was going on. And so we started this group to try to counteract drug abuse in the beginning. And we had a court watchers program also. But as I became more involved, I had liaison with the police department. I had liaison, of course, with the county attorney, and also with the sheriff's department. So I did learn a tremendous amount, and I decided to translate that into a book and perhaps give other people a little insight as to what was going on.
All right. And, of course, what did you finally come to the conclusion? Why do we have so much problem as far as drugs are concerned? Why do we have the problems as far as our crime? Why can't these problems be addressed and solved?
Well, of course, my book is about creating crises, as you mentioned. And these crises are artificial crises that are designed to change values, traditional values, and they're designed to move people in a predetermined direction.
And I think that's really so important. Everything is planned ahead of time. You create a crisis, and then, of course, the solution to the crisis actually begins to move the outlook of our people, our society, away from the traditional values we've had in the past towards this solution. But the solution really isn't going to be a long-term solution, because it, in turn, is going to create another crisis, and it goes from crisis to crisis to crisis as America changes and changes forever. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. Our guest this afternoon is Bernadine Hage, and we're talking about her book, Sham social change through contrived crises. And Bernadine certainly is a housewife. She got involved in this battle. Some years ago, they were concerned about drugs, and of course the drugs that was in their community. And as time went by, she began to see how these programs, this creeping crisis, was being used not only there in Arizona where she lived, but all across America, to change the very structure of our society. We see this today, the healthcare crisis. Where did the healthcare crisis come from? The government created the healthcare crisis. We didn't have a healthcare crisis. We didn't have anybody who couldn't get healthcare. 40 years ago, when I started practicing medicine, back in 1960s, like almost 50 years ago now, but there was no crisis. You could get, if you didn't have health insurance, why, we had a county hospital and the doctors went there and everybody got health care, and there were no people starving. There were no homeless on our streets walking around, pushing a little cart. Step by step, they create crisis after crisis because they want a solution. So, Bernadine, I'm going to let you pick up this story and tell what you've learned as you've studied this.
Well, let's start with the drug crisis. The drug crisis was introduced to introduce sensitivity training in the young, and that we must be tolerant of everything. And, of course, the drug crisis undermined parental authority, but mostly it loosened inhibitions. So it became easy to introduce abortion and some of the other crises. Because I ran across an article in preparation for educational planners leaflet that was very interesting. It said, a crisis situation emphasizes the need for an innovation and speeds its rate of adoption. A crisis situation emphasizes the need for an innovation and speeds its rate of adoption. And that is exactly what the people who were creating these crises envisioned. They wanted the innovations to be speedily adopted. And another crisis that I'd like to address...
Hold that thought for just a moment. We want to bring our stations back on board, and we'll be right back here.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this afternoon is Bernadine Hayes, and of course her book is Sham: Social Changes Through Contrived Crises, and how they're always creating, always have this latest crisis coming down the line. And then they'll have a study group. We see this in our area with traffic. Oh, my goodness, we've got traffic problems. Let's get a group together. But we've got a water problem. Let's get a group together. Let's do a big study. And they never, of course, try to solve the problem. They don't want solutions. They want problems. They want to create a water crisis. They want to create a traffic crisis. They want to create all sorts of crises. And then, of course, with each crisis, we take away a little bit more freedom. And, of course, we begin to change the structure of society. And there's no problem facing the world today that a new series of government laws won't make worse. But that's what they really want. So you pick up the story there, Bernadine.
Well, I would like to address the overpopulation crisis, because, as you say, we're just faced with all kinds of crises, and it's to instill fear in people, so they'll be afraid get the innovation in going, you know. In the late 60s, The replacement family in the news was promoted as the husband and the wife and a little boy and a little girl. And all the magazines featured this, parents smiling with a little boy and a little girl. And then the population propaganda became so pervasive that actually... I talked to one young woman in Tucson, and she was practically in tears because she had bought into the overpopulation crisis, and she decided that she was not going to have a child because if she had a child, it would create more of an overpopulation crisis. So this overpopulation crisis actually created abortion on demand. And that is when that's when they brought court cases into court, like the American Civil Liberties Union brought a case into court. And, Dan, that was a very interesting case. I sat in on it. And there was a woman from the ACLU, and I won't mention her name, but she was on the stand, and the prosecutor had a fetus in the bottle, and he presented that to her and asked her, how many little toes does that fetus have? We all know that the fetus is well-formed at 3 months. And she said, oh, well, I can't see. I don't have my glasses. And so the judge said, well, get your glasses, Mrs. Green. And then she got her glasses, and she looked, and she just spat out the word, bye. But in any case, the abortion went through the court, and Norma McCorvey was the woman in Roe versus Wade that brought the abortion issue before the Supreme Court. Well, Norma, of course, claims she'd been gang raped by men in Georgia, I believe. And then, of course, that's what brought abortion into our society, and it made abortion legal. But the terrible thing about this was that she lied. Norma McCorvey lied. She wasn't raped at all. She just did not want to carry her baby to term. And so she
And of course, the attorneys who took this case knew that she had lied.
Of course.
The whole thing was built upon a lie. And of course, it really started out, abortion was only for rape or incest. And who could be in favor of rape or incest? And what a terrible thing it is when a woman has to carry a child conceived out of rape or incest, and then for the health of the mother. And, of course, it was that health of the mother that then became, of course, the justification for abortion on demand.
Well, unfortunately, when this law came into effect, you know, at first they spoke of rape and incest, but we now have 43 million abortions. I mean, all these women obviously weren't raped, you know, or the victims of incest.
And, of course, now, of course, we've got to bring in another 30 million illegal immigrants, so we'll have people here to do the jobs that would have been done by the children had they been born here.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And so they do away with one thing, they create another problem. Actually, in France today, they're paying women to have children because their population's dying off. The same thing is true in Italy and in Germany and certainly in Russia. And they're subsidizing people in Russia to have children. There they have 1.1 children per family. And Russia will be die off, or either that or be populated entirely by Muslims. And yet they keep telling us, oh my goodness, the population explosion. And it doesn't matter how much of a lie it is, if they repeat it often enough, people eventually come to believe.
Absolutely. And, you know, the thing is that with the way that this is presented, it's very difficult for people not to believe it because, as you said, they lie and they lie and they lie, and before long, people begin to think that the lies are the truth.
And have you ever noticed, of course, that we never, never on television, we can see all these horrible things, and I see these programs all the time, and body parts, and, you know, people cut in half, but they would never, never allow people even to buy time on television stations to show what an abortion is, and the unborn child's little head and hand, and all torn apart. Oh, we couldn't show that because it would be offensive, but You see all these other programs, supposedly, when you go into the path lab, and you know, and then you see these horribly dismembered bodies. But we can't allow people to understand what we're doing to children, the 43 million American children. Well, because of course that, because a picture is worth a thousand words. And so the media is controlled. They will not sell television time to people who want to get this message out, because they don't want people to know the truth. We're killing children.
Absolutely. And the very sad part of it is that while we're killing our own American children, illegal aliens are just flooding over our borders, 18 to 20 million illegals so far. And I ran across an article that said if you change language, you change behavior. And for a long time, the phrase illegal aliens was used, and I used it. Everybody used the phrase illegal aliens. And then the powers that be decided that someone who entered our country was to be denoted as undocumented. Well, then, after a while, undocumented lost favor, so the word undocumented was changed to immigrant. Now, there's a tremendous difference between an illegal alien and a legal immigrant.
No, have you seen the latest thing? Now they're simply migrants.
Migrants,
you know, they're not illegal aliens here at all. They're simply migrants. It's sort of like, I mean, it's almost funny when we see how they can use words to conceal what's going on. We're not going to increase the number of troops we're sending to over to Iraq. We're going to surge the number. We're not going to increase the number of troops. We're not going to send more troops. We're going to surge the troops.
Absolutely. If you change language, you change behavior.
And, of course, you know, they figure that the average American, you know, well, we're just surging. I mean, what's wrong with surging? It's not like increasing. And they intentionally confuse people by changing the language. You're so right, Bernadine. And the average American doesn't see how we're being manipulated by the people who control the medium.
You mentioned that now people that are illegal are listed as undocumented. But the latest thing I saw, Dr. Stan, was now they call them simply entrants. Simply entering now. And never mind that they're just flooding across their borders. They're entering.
But, of course, what it's really all about, they want, of course, to have a multilingual, multicultural society so that they can play one group against the other. This is really what it's all about. They want to disrupt our society, and you can do what they've done in Canada, where you play the French-speaking against the English-speaking, you divide and conquer, and then you establish a dictatorship. They know exactly what they're doing.
Absolutely.
And recently, of course, once again, the vote came up, should we make English the official language? And it was voted down. And the president says, I think English should be the official language of our country. Why does he say that? Because he knows the people support it.
Of course.
But you go to his webpage, whitehouse.gov, that's whitehouse.gov, and you'll find all of the president's speeches are printed both in English and in Spanish. Now, if he really believes that English should be the official language, then why is he first printing all of his speeches? Why are they all available in Spanish? And,
well,
of course, he says one thing, he has another agenda.
Well, his agenda perhaps is that he's looking toward votes. You know, I don't know what, I really can't second guess what his agenda is. But I would like to go back to the illegals and the reason we have the illegal problem. I saw an article. I found something very interesting when I was reading the notes from a religious conference. And I found out that the main reason the industrialized nations are having a problem with illegals is because at this conference in Beirut, Lebanon.
Hold that thought. You're going to have to hold the thought. We'll be back
okay.
here just a moment. Well, Bernadine, you go right ahead. You were just saying this conference in Beirut, Lebanon. When was the conference and what was it about?
Yeah, it was the conference was in 1966. And it was being run by the World Council of Churches. And but unfortunately, there were more there were not too many people of religious bent there. There were a lot of people who were attending the conference who were giving in input that were not necessarily religious people. And at this conference, the World Council of Churches decided that it was time to take from the haves and give to the have-nots. And so they devised a plan. And in this plan, they said, well, we'll just send a lot of people to these developing countries, people who are artists and artisans and doctors and so forth, to help these poor people, which was, you know, a good idea. However, the people in the developed countries did not want to go to the underdeveloped countries necessarily. And so the World Council of Churches said, okay, we'll just facilitate it so that they can come to the developed countries. And that's, in my estimation, how it began. And, you know, we're not the only one who's facing an influx of illegal people. France has the Albanians. Germany has the Turkish. England has a lot of Arabic. You know, everyone is having some sort of a problem with trying to keep their own culture and their own language and so forth.
But don't you think they really want to break down the culture? They want to break down the language. They really want to destroy the infrastructure of the existing society and create this sort of universal this one world government concept. They want to do away with nationhood and national sovereignty. Isn't that really what it's about?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You have pinpointed it. There is a group that is working against U.S. sovereignty. In fact, the American Civil Liberties Union is very heavily involved. The ACLU has been working for a long time to destroy U.S. sovereignty. They've been, they take court cases of flag burners, for one thing. They do a lot of things that, and there are a number. I wish people were more aware of how pervasive the one world government push is. It's bringing us closer and closer to socialism. We used to be a democracy. We used to be actually a republic, but now we're drifting closer to socialism. And in, I think, Franklin D. Roosevelt's day, they said, they talked about creeping socialism. But now it's actually galloping socialism. And
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is Bernadine Hagen. Certainly she's talking about how our societies are changing. And one of the reasons they're changing, one of the reasons they're welcoming this massive influx of people from other countries with different cultures and different languages is because the leaders of our nation and many other nations don't believe in national sovereignty. They believe in one world government. And Bernadine was just simply saying that, you know, back in the days of Franklin Delano Roosevelt, they used to talk about creeping socialism. Today it's not creeping anymore. It's galloping socialism, but people don't understand what socialism is. It's a sincere, benevolent, idealistic theory, but it doesn't work.
Absolutely.
Without force, there has to be somebody in charge there has to be an authoritarian figure that makes the whole system work. Otherwise, the whole thing falls apart and is really a pattern, a plan, for the institution of a feudalistic society in what was once the land of the free and the home of the brave. And there really are people who believe that they should be the feudal lords and we should be the feudal serfs. There are people who have a different worldview. And that's what it's all about, not only here in the United States, but all throughout the world. You go right ahead there, Bernadette.
Yes. Well, there are people who are pushing for interdependence. And, of course, I have a very old book, but my book says defines socialism and Marxism the same way. The production, let's see, it defines it the same way. Right now I can't remember the definition, but going back to the American Civil Liberties Union, which I think is one of the prime movers of the one world government.
I call them the Anti-Christian Lawyers Union, but go right ahead.
Well, I think that's very apropos. I think it hits it pretty well. Because, you know, the American Civil Liberties Union was started by a communist. His name was Roger Baldwin. And his wife, Madeline Doty, was a courier for the Bolsheviks in Russia. And they came here, and they just decided that they were going to make us into a socialist-communist nation. And so the first thing that Roger Baldwin did was decided that he would not go into the draft. And so they had a court case. And he said that he would never submit to the draft.
And well, of course, I was in the First World War when we were drafting men to go over and die for a war that wasn't ours. And there were a lot of people who felt that way. Just as today, there are a lot of people who are very unhappy about what's going on. But they follow the false leadership because there is no good leadership here to tell people what to do. And so Roger Baldwin was playing on a normal impulse of many people at the time of the First World War, not to want to go overseas to fight a war that wasn't our war.
On the other hand, what transpired next, I mean, this was all part of a plan.
Sure it was.
They called themselves the peace movement, but in World War II, when the U.S. entered the war, and then when Germany attacked Russia, the communists here, the peaceniks here, were strangely silent because the U.S. and Russia were on the same side, so they could hardly attack the United States. You know, and the same thing happened in Vietnam. There were people who opposed the Vietnam War, and there were people who opposed it on legitimate terms. But there were also people who opposed it to try to bring the United States down.
Well, because there were people who opposed it because they wanted the communists to win the war. That was the thing. They really were pro-communists. There were other people who said, you know, for many reasons, they said, well, we're really not trying to win this war. I mean, it was the most ridiculous war in history. A war where we were never allowed to attack the enemy. They could only attack us. And so you're absolutely right. There were two groups. One was the one who wanted the communists to win. And then there were others, the ones who said, look, you know, this war is philosophically wrong. And that war was used to divide our nation, wasn't it?
Right, and it certainly did. You know, it did a lot of damage, and there were people who, you know, it was almost like the Civil War. You know, where some people were for and.
Oh, hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. But our guest today is Bernadine Hayes, and we're talking about, the Vietnam War. And I think it's so important for people to understand the Vietnam War and the various forces that were at work. What most people do not understand is, in my estimation, the entire anti-war movement was coordinated there by the same people who are pushing the war. In other words, they control both sides of the situation. They control the anti-war movement, they control the pro-war movement, and legitimate critics had no place to go. But pick the story up there.
Well, I agree that, people created the war, and then they decided that, well, for instance, Germany. Germany had needed tires. And so we had tires, and we supplied Harbor and Company with tires.
You're speaking of the Second World War?
Yes, World War II. World War II. And, here we're fighting a war against the Germans with one hand and helping the Germans with the other, And this goes on all the time with other things.
Well, of course, this is the way it's always been with the communists. On one hand, they were the wicked enemies threatening America. On the other hand, they were being financed by America and American corporations. Doesn't make sense.
No.
But then so much of what's going on today doesn't make sense either, unless you understand that nothing is as appears to be. Go ahead.
Yes, that's absolutely true. Nothing is as it appears to be. For instance, the ACLU, back to them, they've always they claim to be defenders of free speech. But nothing could be further from the truth. In the late 60s, there was a rash of heckling. College students were heckling invited speakers. And so the ACLU jumped in, and they began to support violations of United States law, admittedly valid laws. And they did this, they claimed to express political or social opinion. But in other words, the ACLU decided to oppose valid laws and bring cases to court to bring about changes. This, to me, was one of the most ridiculous things that they came up with.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Bernadine Hayes, and her book is Sham: Social Chains to Contrive Crises. And this is the oldest trick in the world. They create a crisis, and then you read about it day after day, week after week in the television. The newspapers, you hear about it on the radio, and you'll see it on television. They'll focus our attention on the spinach conspiracy. Oh, we're all going to die because of the E. coli on spinach. Two people in a nation of 300 million people died because of spinach. What was the purpose? Why, to get new legislation through, of course. Why do you think they focused our attention on these one specific issue over and over and over and over and over again ad nauseum? That's how you manipulate the public. Well, before we go on, Bernadine, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you, get your book. Do you have a website?
I have an email, yes. B as in Bernadine, B M as in Mary, Haig, HAAG, at MSN.com.
All right, give that one more time.
B M Haig.
B M Haig, HAAG, right?
Yes, at MSN.com.
Okay.
And they can reach me at that email address.
And how would they get your book if they wanted to get your book?
Well, it would be sent to them. The book is $12, but $4 shipping would make it $16.
All right, fine. It's a fascinating book, certainly going into the background of so much of what goes on today, all contrived. And, of course, what will the next escalate? Maybe it'll be the threat of bird flu. My goodness, we're just going to have to you know, to give up our freedom because we may have bird flu here that may kill us all, or you know, or what will the next crisis be down the line? Oh, it's the threat of terrorism. We have to be over in the Middle East fighting the terrorists, because if we don't fight them there, they're going to be over here. We're not fighting terrorists over there. We're fighting people who are objecting to our occupation of their country, and we're stealing their oil, and they don't want us there. How would we feel if, you know, if there was a Chinese army in the United States occupying us in the name of wanting to restore order after the chaos that that they had created after invading us? We'd be very resentful of that, and that's the tragedy. But if we were really had a threat of terrorism, why have they never sealed the border? Why have there been no terrorist threats? Why do we have no protection on our planes from terrorist attacks? And only 10% of our planes have marshals on them, probably less than that, although the number is secret because we can't let Osama bin Laden know how many marshals we have, but we don't have very many. And other pilots aren't armed, and of course even FedEx is experimenting with putting, you know, anti-missile devices on their planes, but of course we're not going to put them on our passenger planes. Well, if we really had a terrorist threat, ladies and gentlemen, we would have anti-missile devices on every passenger plane in the United States if it was a real threat. But it's not a real threat. We just got to convince you it's a real threat, so you're willing to give up your freedom to protect you against those wicked terrorists, because Osama bin Laden could be sneaking into your house any night with a bomb. How many times have we seen on television stories of terrorist attacks on America? Just averted, usually, or perhaps even they take place. But in reality, how many terrorist attacks have there been? And there haven't been any.
Yes, there have been two.
Well, other than since 9/11.
Oh, yes. You're clarifying.
Since
that.
But that was, of course, how they're trying to sell us, that there's a terrible threat. So go right ahead, Bernadine.
Yes, well, I agree that there are people who are using the threat of terrorism in order to tie our hands more closely, you know. But I do believe that terrorism, I spoke about that in the last part of my book, but that was before it became a threat and before 9/11. And since 9/11, there have been terrorists, you know, Tucson is there have been quite a few terrorists in Tucson that were in that had flight training here that were involved in the 9/11 debacle, and I talked to a man who is in the Border Patrol, and he said that he found a prayer book, Quran, and a prayer rug that had been left behind because evidently they didn't want to be caught with it and, you know, be labeled as an Arab when they got in here. But there definitely is something going on, and I do believe that that Islam and Christianity are on collision courses, or maybe collision is too strong a word, but they are not compatible, because if a Muslim believes in the Quran, and if he's a good Muslim, he's going to believe in the Quran. If he believes in the Quran, he's going to believe in the writings of Muhammad. And of course, Allah, he said that Allah assigns a person to him he'll be recompensed by Allah with a reward or booty if he participates in holy battles. And and he also said that, Muhammad is Allah's apostle, and those who follow him are ruthless to the unbelievers, but merciful to one another.
You're absolutely right in everything you say. The trouble is, if our leaders really believe that, why haven't they sealed the borders? If our leaders really believe that there is a threat, certainly the religions are incompatible. And I believe that this is a totally false religion. But why do they have a catch and release program if our leaders really believe there's a threat? The threat, of course, is really to our civil liberties. Here, in the name of fighting the wicked Osama bin Laden, if there is really a threat here, yes, there is. The Muslims can't produce anything. I mean, the Muslim faith has led to a totally decrepit society over there. The Muslims,
absolutely,
and of
absolutely.
Course, they have. There are no great scientific achievements in the Muslims, you know, since the time of Muhammad. What the Muslim faith has done is to certainly discourage individual incentive on the part of the Muslim.
Well,
now, what are some of the other issues that you have in your book that you'd like to talk about?
We were talking about...
What about euthanasia and the suicide crisis?
Oh, yes. Well, now that's another crisis that was created. And unfortunately, our government was involved in pushing pushing for euthanasia. And there was a... Let's see...
Well, certainly they're doing everything to saying there's just too many people in the world, and of course there'd be some times when we ought to just let people die, we'd be more comfortable. Certainly they're trying to push this within the medical profession. After all, you don't want to prolong life too long, and so maybe if we just took away food and water from people when they come in the emergency room.
Oh, that's just a terrible travesty.
But of course they're really pushing this and trying to get the doctors saying, look, if you didn't come in the hospital and you start food and water, How do you actually go ahead and turn it off? Or sometimes isn't it more humane just to let people die? And they're trying to get the doctors to go with that. Fortunately, the doctors haven't done it yet, but little by little, you know, the whole thing about Terry Schiavo, you know, when she died, and of course, it's the most amazing thing. We saw pictures night after night of Terry, and she didn't look bad. I mean, she really looked fairly healthy. The trouble is, those pictures we saw night after night as she was being dehydrated were pictures of Sherry at that time. Terry, they were pictures taken many weeks and months beforehand. You didn't see the pictures of her, you know, her face as her skin dried up, as her tongue became parched, as her eyes began to sink.
I know.
They wouldn't allow those pictures on television.
Of course not. That would make people stop and think about euthanasia, you know, that maybe it wasn't a good thing. Going back to changing language, when the people that were pushing for euthanasia they called people that in the last stages of life vegetables, and after all, you know, there's nothing wrong with getting rid of a vegetable. There was a government employee, I thought this was quite interesting. He said that, in other words, the government thought that they would save money if they just knocked off a few of the elderly people, because then they wouldn't have to, you know, give them money for drugs and so forth. He said, this man said something about the cost savings from a nationwide push toward euthanasia would be likely to be enormous.
Of course they would.
Sure, because over one-fifth of the Medicare expenditures are, as I understand, are for persons in their last years of life, you know. So,
Of course, this is one of the things why they're trying to get everybody to take their influenza shots, knowing full well that and the scientific studies are there by Dr. Fudenberg. Anybody wants to debate, we'll be glad to provide that for him. And if you are foolish enough to believe what you're told, and between 60 and 65, and you take 3 or 4 influenza shots over a 5-year period, 10 years down the line, the chance of Alzheimer's disease has increased 1,000%. Well, if that's true, then why are they trying to get people to take their influenza shots? And what does this do to our children? Well, today, 1 in 6 American children has some sort of a neurodevelopmental abnormality. They know what they're doing. They just don't want the American people to know.
I think there was some sort of a study on children that have ADHD, the you know, developmental problems. And I think it had something to do with the shots that were being given.
Right.
It wasn't flu shots, but other shots.
Well, these were the childhood vaccines. Mm-hmm. So they took the mercury out of the childhood vaccines, but they left it in vaccines that they give to children. Oh, they're so clever with the misuse of words. So that they can give a vaccine laden with mercury to a six-month-old child, but it's not a childhood vaccine, because after all, the childhood diseases are diphtheria. Or measles or mumps, but influenza isn't a childhood vaccine, so it's all right to give them a vaccine laden with mercury in it, knowing full well the terrible toxic effects it has and how it destroys the mind. And
yeah.
This is, well, certain children, of course, are not going to have a reaction, but an awful lot of them do. And when you have a nation with 1 in 6 children with a neurodevelopmental abnormality, you know, where is the outcry from the medical profession?
Well, you're not going to get an outcry from the medical profession because, you know, people in alternative medicine are doing some really great, they're doing some really great things, some great research, but it's not being, the medical profession, the AMA, is not espousing it, you know, they're not. He won't have anything to do with it. So.
Amen to that. Well, you've got a section in your book about the New World Order. Would you like to perhaps develop that idea? Because this is such an important issue. People really don't understand what's going on because they don't understand there really are people with an intense hatred of America who want to destroy our sovereignty and merge us into this one world system. What's that all about?
The New World Order is it's very pervasive. And there, in fact, many, many of the leaders of the world, the British Isles, the United States, Holland, Germany, and Italy, these leaders have a tremendous amount of money. They have a tremendous amount of influence. And perhaps they feel that they are doing this for the betterment of mankind. I don't think that they are. I think that they're into power. They have tremendous power as it is. They want more power. They, you know, they want, just like Orwell's 1984, they want a lot of proles to do the work, and they want to have all of the perks, like they do in Russia, you know, the limousines and the people in power have the dachas on the Black Sea, etc., etc. So the One World Government has a lot of arms. I like to call them tentacles. There's
sort of like an octopus, then.
Absolutely, and these tentacles reach into every aspect of society, and the people that are wielding them are ruthless. I mean, they are definitely in the power. And there's the Club of Rome is one. Then there's the Club of 30, and a number of others.
Well, of course, there's the Council on Foreign Relations, the Bilderbergers,
yes,
the Trilateral Commission.
That's right, the Council on Foreign Relations and the Bilderbergers. You've mentioned all of them, or many of them, and they are set on. And I think maybe that's one reason why. That's another reason why people are being allowed to come across our borders, because it weakens the United States. As you know, it will bring about perhaps the merger of the western part of the United States with South America, all speaking Spanish, and that will be called Eurasia, which will be the Orient, East Asia, and Oceania.
We are part of
Oceania.
That was, of course, the three major world blocks that, of course, George Orwell described. However, Chris, the reality is right now they're forming a European bloc, that's the European Union,
absolutely.
A North American bloc, that's the North American Union, a South American bloc, an Asian bloc, an African bloc, and then there's, of course, the bloc of the Arab countries, the Muslim countries. And they're all to become trading zones, and then they'll join them together. But certainly George Orwell foresaw what's going on today.
Yes, he did.
And where it will end, as he described it in 1984, and I hope every listener will get a copy of the book and read it, A Boot Stamping on a Human Face Forever. A Boot Stamping on a Human Face Forever. That was George Orwell's description.
Wow.
Where we're headed.
I wasn't aware of that.
Go ahead, Bernie. You've got 3 minutes.
I'd like to close with this, and it gives some people something to think about. Going back to to Islam and the Muslims, and the contrast between what Jesus said and what Muhammad said. I mean, there are a lot of contrasts, but I thought this one was quite interesting. Jesus said that, John 16:2, the hour is coming when whoever kills you will think he is offering service to God. And Muhammad said, fight those who believe not in Allah on the last day, nor hold that forbidden which has been forbidden by Allah and his messengers. And more acknowledging the religion, you know.
And, of course, the thing is that originally, of course, most of the people in the United States had come from Western Europe or from Eastern Europe. But, of course, they were all coming from the Christian point of view. And then in 1965, while our attention was focused on Vietnam, why Ted Kennedy changed our immigration laws, but promised it would never change the demographics of America. Well, of course, you know what Ted Kennedy,
yeah.
If he says something, and with Ted Kennedy's word and $5, you can buy a cup of coffee at Starbucks any place in the country. Ted Kennedy knew exactly what he was doing, because Ted Kennedy's a very evil person. And we begin bringing people in with all these different cultures, and we have millions of Americans in this country today. Some of them have come for freedom, but if you are Muslim, why, of course, and you don't go along with their agenda, they'll simply kill you. If you convert to Christianity, they will kill you.
Absolutely.
And
if you convert to the Muslim faith, you might be okay, although you will never be held in the same regard as those who converted you to Islam, you know.
Well, we're in real trouble today because most Americans don't understand America. They don't understand why they have brought all these people with other races and religions into this country. And it's really very simple. They want to change our culture.
Absolutely. And they are doing it. They're changing our culture. They're changing our values. They're degrading our values, the values of the Ten Commandments, the values of our Constitutional Bill of Rights, and all the other values that we've held so dear.
Amen to that.
Made it into the United States of America.
Well, Bernadine, we're out of time. God bless you. And thank you so very much for being with us. Once again, that email where people can get your book.
B as in baby, M as in Mary, Haag, Haag, at MSN.com.
Got that. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty and Chris Edwards. Bernadine Hayes we've had, and hope you enjoyed the program, but we have a very real problem, and people don't understand what is happening is not by accident, but by intent. And really, for decades, they've been working to move us to where we are today. And where are we today? We're on the verge of World War III, and as our attention is focus on what's going on over the Middle East, and of course most people don't understand that they really do want to take us to war with Iran. Doesn't matter what the American people want, doesn't want what the Iranian people want. There's a really ruling elite, and they have a different agenda. And of course, Congress does not have the courage, at least it hasn't had in the past, to say, we're not going to fund this. I hope many of you will write facts and call your congressmen and your senators and say, cut off funding for the war and withdraw the power in the War Powers Act that gives the president to go to war. We do not want to go to war with Iran. And if you create an incident, and if we know you're going to create an incident, if you do, we're ever going to have you impeached. It's the only way we're going to be able to head this off, because if this comes about, it's going to have a profound impact on America. So be aware that there's a move to expand the war, not simply to surge our troops, but to expand the war over there. And remember that the Gulf of Tonkin incident in 1964 was totally phony. There was no Gulf of Tonkin incident in Vietnam, and 58,000 American boys died for absolutely nothing. We were never allowed to win the war. And if you haven't got our 4 tapes out on Vietnam, you need to get it. You need to get the book, Kiss the Boys Goodbye. Suppressed for many years about all the men we abandoned, about the CIA involvement in drugs. The book was actively suppressed. In fact, up in Canada, when they printed 5,000 new copies, somebody just accidentally shredded 5,000 copies of the book. We have the book now. They're used copies, but they're in good condition, at least. Most of them are. We have, and if you get one now, you'll get a good copy. Kiss the Boys Goodbye. And of course, if you get it with our 4 tape set on the men we left behind, why, you get a special reduced price. Understand Vietnam. It's the only way to understand what's going on in Afghanistan, what's going on in Iraq, and what will soon be going on in Iran. So, certainly our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. You need to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. You can get people to watch it free of charge. The DVD is posted on the internet. Google in Brotherhood of Darkness video. Brotherhood of Darkness video, and you can watch it there for nothing. We hope you'll buy it, though, and get it in other people's hands. And then, of course, you get the Brotherhood of Darkness special with the book, the video, and the audio tape of the book, the DVD, and the audio tape for the special reduced price. Get the information. Understand what's going on. Understand how they're poisoning our children with fluoride. Get my talk on the hidden agenda. And then, of course, get the syllabus that goes with that. To understand sustainable development, the video and the syllabus at a special reduced price. To understand the war in Iraq. Iraq, the untold story, because it's a story not of simply of Iraq, but of all of the wars of the last century, every one of them contrived. American people don't want to fight wars, but they're constantly manipulating the wars, and then the big media machine is turned on, the propaganda machine, to whip up, you know, a hysterical patriotism. Patriotism does not mean whatever my country does, right and wrong. Your loyalty is to the Constitution, which limits the power of government so men can be free. If you want to know how the media is controlled, the book, The New Media Monopoly, written by a professor in Berkeley, The New Media Monopoly, television is controlled, radio is controlled, most of the books, most of the newspapers are controlled, 90 to 95% of the media is controlled by 6 mega corporations whose loyalty is not to America, but to the internationalist dream, the New World Order, the New World Religion. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Please pray for our leaders and ministers, but pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and for our protection. Well, till tomorrow, may the Lord be with you. And remember our number, 1-800-544-8927.